Thanks, Ruth. I'll be reading this morning from Isaiah chapter 40, verses 21 through to 31. Have you not known? Have you not heard? Has it not been told you from the beginning? Have you not understood from the foundations of the earth? It is he who sits upon the circle of the earth, and its inhabitants are like grasshoppers, who stretches out the heavens like a curtain and spreads them out like a tent to dwell in. He brings the princes to nothing. He makes the judges of the earth useless. Scarcely shall they be planted. Scarcely shall they be sown. Scarcely shall their stock take root in the earth. When he will also blow on them and they will wither, and the whirlwind will take them away like stubble. To whom then will you liken me? Or to whom shall I be equal, says the Holy One? Lift up your eyes on high and see who has created these things and who brings out their host by number. He calls them all by name, by the greatness of his might and the strength of his power, not one is missing. Why do you say, O Jacob, and speak, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, and my just claim is passed over by my God? Have you not known? Have you not heard? The everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, neither faints nor is weary. There is no searching of his understanding. He gives power to the weak, and to those who have no might, he increases strength. Even the youth shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall. But those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint.
Good morning, everybody. On the 21st of December 1968, well before any of us were born, Apollo 8, the mission dubbed Apollo 8, was launched and went off to orbit the moon. Now, this was the first manned orbit of the moon, and we have the moon here. Note this is not to scale. There. But the crew, and there was three crew in there. Previous space missions were to travel or orbit the Earth there, but they never actually came too far away from that orbit. This time in their three-day journey to the moon, they were travelling much further away from Earth than anybody had up till then. And it was, after so 3 days, it was on Christmas Eve that they were reaching the moon's orbit there, and they caught their first images back to Earth, and they could see the Earth from afar for the very first time with the naked eye. While they'd had some pictures, this was people actually being able to look at it. And it was quite impacting on those three men there, and there was they were able to broadcast what the men were being able to see, and also what they were saying as well. And at that time, it was actually the most watched TV program ever, as millions of people tuned in to watch and listen to that broadcast. And the three gentlemen there, the commander, Jim Lovell, said, "The vast loneliness is awe-inspiring, and it makes you realise just what you have back there on Earth." And they went on with a bit of a broadcast there, and they ended the broadcast there with the pilot, William Anderson. They took turns in saying a few things. And he said, "For all the people on Earth, the crew of Apollo 8 has a message we'd like to send you. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And the earth was without form and void, and the darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said, 'Let there be light,' and there was light. And God saw the light, and it was good. And God divided the darkness from the light. And then Jim Lovell continued. And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And the evening and the morning were the first day. And God said, let there be firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters. And God made the firmament and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters, and it was so. And he called the firmament heaven, and the evening and morning were the second day. And then the commander, and remember they're looking at this earth for the first time from afar, Frank Borman finished with the reading, and God said, let the waters under the heaven be gathered together in one place, and let the dry land appear. And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters he called seas, and God saw that it was good. Now we're of course familiar with that saying, but the impact there of those spacemen as they were looking at this earth from afar was life-changing. And they said goodnight and wished everyone a Merry Christmas, there being Christmas Eve. An interesting perspective from three men seeing the world from the first time, from that distance there. I might pop these down, because we're not allowed any ball games in the hall. So in the passage that Bill just read to us from Isaiah, at the time the Israelites were in captivity there, Isaiah himself was in his latter days of his life. He was 600 and something when he died, so maybe he was 500 and something, probably maybe had a bit to go, so maybe not that old. But Isaiah was appealing to the Israelites there who were entrenched in idolatry at the time to have a look at what they're doing, the things that they were worshipping, and to make a comparison to the great God. And of course, the conclusion was there is no comparison. The greatness and awesomeness of God there compared to what they were doing. And he says in verse 26, he says, lift up your eyes on high and see who has created these things, who brings out their host by number. He calls them by name. Isaiah's trying to get their attention on where does this stuff come from? They're idols of different metals and wood. They're usually bronze. They're, where do they come from? Who makes these things? And to look up in the heavens, what are you doing, guys? You need to look further afield than what's there in front of your face. And Isaiah goes on, by the greatness of his might and the strength of his power, not one is missing. Looking at the big picture there to try and see not what was just in front of their faces, but to see what where this has all come from there, the bigger picture. Now, a couple of days ago while I was plagiarising away, preparing for today, I was looking at the message there from Joe to Koch there and inspired my thinking there. And just a little bit of background there of what Joe was writing there. He opens his comments where a lot of people say, if I can't see it, I won't believe it. So people want to be able to see something before they can actually believe in it. Now, of course, we've got arguments there. Well, what about magnetism or electricity or gravity there? And obviously we can see these effects there, but not actually see the actual items themselves there. So the other thing is, it's the same with your naked eye looking out in space. And you can only see so much there in space with the naked eye. And of course now we have fantastic telescopes and we've got pictures such as from the Apollo 8 mission there, where we've been able to see some wonderful things that there's no way that we can see with our naked eye. Of course, we can't see God either with a telescope or other types of instruments there. And it says in John 1:18, no one has ever seen God, but the one and only Son, who is himself God and is in closest relationship with Father, has made him known. So we know God through his son. And while there's no way to prove God exists with certain physical instruments there and being able to see him, it doesn't stop with God either, with just his creation either. We see the effect that it has on things, on us personally. And of course, Jesus' apostles there, they were able to see the effect that he had on those around him. And their conclusion, of course, that God is love. God is love, and we could see that there in the scriptures there, the things that Jesus did and said there. So while we can't fully see these things, we can't explain the invisible, like love or grace, we know that it actually does exist. And we can partially see it, and I use the term partially because we don't want to be in the trap of assuming that the visible explains the invisible. Now, T.F. Torrance, who studied theology and science, he postulates the opposite can actually be true, that the invisible can actually explain the visible. And to make his point, he uses the parable of the workers in the vineyard there in Matthew 20 and verses 1 through to 16. And he talks of the parable there. He's talking about the employer who gets his workers there throughout the day to work in his vineyard there. And some start at the start of the day and do their full thing, probably with a lunch break and smoko at 10:30 or something. And others will join throughout the day. And some of them only join that work crew towards the end of the day. But this employer gives each of those workers the same amount. And of course, we throw our hands up if that was today and say, oh, that's not fair. They've all worked different hours, etc. Why do they all get the same? And of course, as Torrance points out, some miss the point of Jesus' parable. It's not about the wages or fairness, but about God's grace. How it's unconditional, generous, and powerfully transforming, and given to all. It's not based on how long we've worked, how long we've believed, or how much we've studied, but it's grace that is based entirely on who God is, on his love. And so Jesus, in saying this parable, sharing with them, shows how it makes the visible, what they've seen, to explain the invisible of God's grace and his nature and his love. And God's kingdom is not about how much we earn, but about God's lavish generosity and his love. So the invisibility of God's grace does not make it any less real, we conclude. And God gave himself to us in person, in a relationship with each one of us there. And we live by faith and not by sight. We feel the power of God's grace as we come to know his purpose and for his forgiveness and to love us, the amazing gift of God's grace. And Paul says in Philippians 2 verse 13, "For it is God who works in you to will and to act in order to fulfil God's purpose." So while what we see around us, the beautiful heavens, the things in nature, that it's just part of what we see of God and his evidence there of his part in our lives. I just wanted to leave you with David's perspective, his thoughts, and the way he contemplated the awesomeness of God and his creations, and where we stand with God. He says in Psalm 8, verse 3 to 5, "When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars, which you have set in place, what is mankind that you are mindful of them, human beings that you care for them? You have made them a little lower than the angels and crowned them with glory and honour."